This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, surprise talks between the Afghan Taliban and the government. Another extension in Iran nuclear talks. Autism and smell could be connected.
Much of our work sees a major role for the sense of smell in social communication. And social communication is altered in autism. Of course, it's the hallmark of the condition.
A troubled singer tries a new song. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Multiple factions of the Afghan Taliban participated Tuesday night in a groundbreaking meeting with representatives of the Afghan government and other national and international stakeholders in the Pakistani capital, Islamabad. No details of the talks are immediately available, but the meeting is the first direct contact between President Ashraf Ghani's National Unity Government and the Islamist insurgent group. IS Ghul reports for VOA from Islamabad and spoke with International Edition's Jim Stevenson about the surprising developments.
Basically, Pakistanis have been under pressure in recent weeks from the Afghan government because they were expecting Pakistan to help facilitate the peace and reconciliation process to end the conflict in Afghanistan. In the last few weeks, we have seen some concrete movement, but still there were no hopes that we will come to this surprising situation that we are witnessing in Islamabad today.
An amazing development, and with the American and Chinese envoys involved, there must have been some behind-the-scenes work on this to make this come about.
Well, that's true, because the United States has really been pushing Pakistan to help the new Afghan government to start the reconciliation process, and they have been engaged with Pakistan since the beginning. And then we have seen that China, after the withdrawal of NATO forces, has gotten serious about engaging in Afghanistan to help bring peace to that country, because China has its own concerns. It's a restive Xinjiang province. It borders Afghanistan. And, you know, there is a threat that if this violence continues and this with emergence of the Islamic State or pro-Islamic State armed factions in Afghanistan, there are more worries for China.
The Afghan government has not had much success in dealing with the Taliban in terms of negotiations, and this would seem to be a different situation now.
Yeah, of course. And let me just tell you that since taking office in September last year, President Ashraf Ghani in Kabul has made attempts to reach out to the Taliban. Many of the Taliban leaders, they have taken refuge on this side of the border in Pakistan, and that because Pakistan had links with these Taliban commanders. And the significance of the meeting that is taking place in Pakistan is that this is the first direct contact between the Ghani government and the Taliban, because for the last 8-9 months, President Ghani has tried his best to bring the Taliban to the negotiating table. There have been indirect contacts with the insurgent group. The first time that now the Afghan government is talking directly to the Taliban.
The Afghans certainly want an end to the violence, and understandably so. What are the Taliban basically seeking?
Well, until now, the Taliban had a very rigid position, certain preconditions before engaging in any peace talks, and they really wanted authorities in Kabul to redraft the constitution, that all the foreign forces, NATO forces, American forces should withdraw from the country, and only then they will engage in talks with the Kabul government. But we clearly see that there is flexibility now. We should expect something from it. And it clearly shows that the Taliban has come under pressure now because, you know, this pro-Islamic State groups are causing more problems for the Taliban in terms of their war, because now they have to fight the Islamic State fighters. So I think that is what is now pressurizing the Taliban to really do something quickly and strike peace deal before there are more problems within their own ranks.
IS Ghul in Islamabad speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. Time now to check out what's trending on social media. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is in the studio with us to do just that. Hi, G.
Hello, Ray. Let's stay with the Afghan Taliban story. VOA's Aisha Tanzim has a story on our website at www.voanews.com titled Afghan Reconciliation Process Formally Begins. As IS Gul reported from Islamabad, multiple factions of the Afghan Taliban are participating in a historic meeting with international stakeholders in the Pakistani capital. The foreign delegation includes American, Afghan, Chinese, Norwegian, and Pakistani officials. It's considered as the first official peace talks between the Islamic group and the foreign governments. We have a comment from an American reader with username Meanbill. He or she wrote, "If the Afghan government can meet with the Taliban without them killing each other, peace is a possibility, isn't it?" The New York Times at NY Times on Twitter also tweeted about the event. It wrote, "The Afghan government hopes its meeting with the Taliban could be a step toward negotiations to end the Afghan war." That's been retweeted more than 100 times.
More than 100 times, I see. So I know the Taliban's Twitter account's been suspended, but any mention about the meeting from other users?
There is, but not very much. That may be because many of the users interested in the topic are tweeting about it in another language, like Arabic or Urdu. A case in point is the Afghan president, Ashraf Ghani, who is on Twitter at Ashraf Ghani, his first and last name. Ghani's official Twitter account posted several hours ago that a Kabul delegation traveled to Pakistan for negotiations with the Taliban. The social media analytics website Topsy shows that hashtag Taliban has been used nearly 4,200 times on Twitter in the last 24 hours. Ray?
Thanks, G. That's our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. You can follow her on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. That's J-E-E-A-B-B-E-Y-L-E-E. We welcome your comments. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. The Iran nuclear talks have been extended again. They will continue at least until Friday, July 10th. International Edition's Jeffrey Young spoke with Timothy Stafford, a research analyst at the Royal United Services Institute in London, about what difficulties negotiators are facing in getting a deal finally worked out.
The fundamental cause of the extension is that the parties have yet to be able to reach a full agreement on the nature of the terms being discussed. But the specific reason in this instance is that Iran has sought to broaden the agenda. So whilst there were outstanding areas in which the parties were not able to agree, particularly on the inspection of military sites, Iran has now sought to broaden the discussion to other areas that have not been previously discussed, particularly with regard to sanctions. So in addition to dealing with the problems that were already on the agenda, now there are an additional range of problems that the parties are going to have to resolve.
We do know that much of the discussion has indeed been focused on the lifting of sanctions against Iran and on what schedule that would take place. Now, there have been some reports that Iran wants its ballistic missile program taken off the discussion table. Can you elaborate on that and whether the P51 negotiators are willing to separate the two?
Yes, so the issue to consider here is that sanctions against Iran mainly fall within one of four categories. There are sanctions against Iran because of its nuclear activity, but also sanctions on its missile technology, its actions with regard to sponsoring terrorism, and for its human rights record. Now, the implicit agreement of the discussions up until this point had been that only those sanctions respective to the nuclear file would be phased out if an agreement was reached. Iran now wants those sanctions jeopardized and removed as well. And in doing so, it's broken the fundamental consensus that underpins these talks and made the agenda much more complex. Now, a number of the P5 countries, P5 plus one countries, are not at all interested in lifting anything with regard to the arms embargo or on missile technology. But Russia and China could potentially be interested in selling parts and arms. So in part, this is an attempt by Iran to split the P5 plus one negotiating parties and gain some more leverage within the talks.
Because you focus on this so directly and intently, a philosophical question. Critics of these Iran nuclear talks have been saying that Iran's scheme is to keep talking and talking while it continues to work on nuclear-related matters that might involve a nuclear weapon. Conversely, others say that the sanctions regime imposed upon Iran is so restrictive that Iran is motivated to conclude an agreement as quickly as possible to get the sanctions lifted sooner or later. Which way do you see it?
Well, there are definitely voices within Iran that would see it entirely differently. There are some on some side, there are some on the other. Now, for critics of the diplomatic process that's going on, the concern about covert activity is definitely at the forefront of their mind. But the more immediate concern is that Iran continues to pull these kinds of diplomatic tricks whenever a deadline approaches. It knows that the United States and its allies are keen for a deal and often keen for a deal at agreed time points. Firstly, it was June the 30th, then it was supposed to be July the 7th. And every time we approach one of these deadlines, it rapidly produces something else on its shopping list that it would like to have in the hope that it can try and secure more advantages than it was expected to secure. The problem with that, of course, is that it results in the entire diplomatic process being delayed and us moving on to further cycles of negotiations, which does not suit any of the parties that are actually at the table.
Timothy Stafford of the Royal United Services Institute in London talking with International Edition's Jeffrey Young. As the clock ticks on an Iran nuclear deal, it could pose some problems for oil prices. International Edition Susan Yaki spoke with New York Business reporter Alexis Christophersis about that.
If world powers and Iran do come to an agreement, it would give oil-rich Iran access to world markets and provide other nations with a guarantee that Iran will not produce nuclear weapons. Of course, the possibility of millions of barrels of oil flooding an already oversupplied market is putting pressure on oil prices, as you can imagine. A restart of a key oil terminal in Libya is not helping matters. Crude is down another 3% to around $50 a barrel. That's after plunging nearly 8% on Monday, and some analysts are predicting we could see crude test a six-year low of $42 a barrel by sometime this summer. And for U.S. investors, we're seeing that they also don't have a lot of faith in the oil pits at the moment, and that's also putting pressure on prices.
Meanwhile, another day has made for another stock sell-off in China. What's happening there?
Well, despite China's best efforts to stabilize its market, we saw the Shanghai Composite drop another 1.3%. And of course, the guaranteed way to stop the sell-off is to halt trading altogether. And you know what? That's exactly what some companies have done. A quarter of all companies listed on China's mainland exchanges have now suspended trading. The sell-off in China, as you can imagine, has reverberated around the globe. U.S. stocks have been mostly lower as investors look ahead to earnings season, which kicks off on Wednesday. They're already bracing for disappointing reports, and they hope for a rebound in earnings by the fourth quarter.
New York Business reporter Alexis Christophersis speaking with International Edition's Susan Yaki. Greece appears to have one last chance to put together an economic reform plan before a full 28-nation European Union summit this Sunday. Leaders at an emergency Eurozone summit in Brussels Tuesday were both angry and unimpressed with Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, who said Greece had made improvements in its request for more bailout money, but had nothing in writing. The stakes are high as the escalating crisis over Greece's bailout threatens the country's financial stability and its Eurozone membership. Lisa Bryant has details from Paris.
Eurogroup Chief Jeroen Dijsselbloem echoed the message being sounded by other members of the currency union as he started a day of crisis talks in Brussels.
After the no vote in Greece, we need to hear from the Greek government first how they see a way out, how they think we can come to an agreement.
Experts warn it may not be easy or quick to find common ground between Greece and its Eurozone counterparts after Greek voters overwhelmingly rejected their bailout offer on Sunday. After defaulting on a debt payment to the IMF last week, Athens faces another key deadline, a $3.8 billion payment due to July 20th to the European Central Bank. Missing that will escalate an already serious funding crisis in Greece. Earlier in the day, French Prime Minister Manuel Valls said it is essential that an agreement is found with Athens.
La France est convaincue que nous ne pouvons pas prendre le risque.
He said France is convinced that it cannot take the risk of a Greek exit from the Eurozone for both economic but especially political reasons. He said it represents a risk to growth and to the world economy. The United States, China, and Japan have also urged a solution that will allow Greece to remain in the currency union. But Eurozone members are divided over just how far they're willing to compromise to reach a deal. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Still to come, autism and odors. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
Researchers in the Netherlands find that eating a handful of nuts or peanuts every day is associated with a lower risk of death from several major disease categories. Professor Piet Vandenbrandt is with Maastricht University.
Nut intake seemed to be protective for both men and women. And that was on total mortality, so any cause of death.
Health benefits of nuts have long been known, but Vandenbrandt says that just 10 grams a day is enough, about half a handful.
What we found is that the beneficial effect of nuts and peanuts is already apparent at a lot lower levels of intake than has been suggested before.
The researchers stressed that these benefits come from peanuts, but not peanut butter.
Did not show this effect at all.
Peanut butter contains added oils and sugars, which may nullify the peanut's health effects. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
This is VOA's International Edition. The nose knows. It reacts to good smells and bad ones. But new research shows this is not the case for children diagnosed with an autism disorder. Measuring these automatic responses to rubbish and roses might one day be a way of detecting autism before a child is old enough to speak. VOA's Maya Pujara explains.
Walk by a bakery, and you might catch yourself taking a big whiff of the mouth-watering smells wafting out of the store. Walk by a bathroom, and you might find yourself doing the exact opposite, pinching your nose and running away. Reacting to smells may not just be a way to find the freshest bread or cleanest bathroom. Research shows we respond to scents of sweat and tears without even noticing, suggesting our sense of smell helps us relate to other people. New research published in Current Biology explores the link between the sense of smell and autism spectrum disorder.
Much of our work sees a major role for the sense of smell in social communication. And social communication is altered in autism. Of course, it's the hallmark of the condition.
Noam Sobel is head of the neurobiology department at Israel's Weizmann Institute. He reports that young children with an autism spectrum disorder do not show this quick and automatic adjustment to good or bad smells. They don't respond any differently to the odor of rotting fish than they do to the scent of roses. Children with more severe symptoms actually seem to inhale unpleasant smells longer than pleasant ones. Sobel and colleagues hooked up 36 children with and without autism to a device called a nasal cannula. It delivered odors and measured the sniff response as the child played a video game.
You just put the nasal cannula on the child's nose, deliver odors, and measure the automatic response. And the child doesn't need to be able to talk, doesn't need to want to talk, doesn't need to be able to participate, and doesn't need to want to participate.
Because being able to speak or move is a requirement of current diagnostic tools, Sobel says the sniff response test could be used to diagnose autism in babies or toddlers. based solely on the sniff response to unpleasant odors, the researchers were able to predict a child's diagnosis of autism with 81% accuracy. Maya Pajara, VOA News, Washington.
Pope Francis urged a crowd of more than 1 million people in the Ecuadorian capital Quito to unite in their belief and help spread the Roman Catholic faith on the continent. The Pope addressed the vast crowd in Quito's Bicentennial Park on Tuesday, the second day of his three-nation South American tour. Pope Francis will leave later today for Bolivia, then heads on to Paraguay on Friday. The World Cup-winning U.S. women's soccer team received a tumultuous welcome in Los Angeles Tuesday for its 5-2 victory against Japan in Vancouver, Canada on Sunday. VOA's Michael Sullivan was among the thousands on hand for the celebration.
The 23 team members got a rousing welcome at LA's Staples Center, where fan Karen Mossy came to celebrate the U.S. women's third World Cup title and the first since 1999.
I am here to support our Team USA women's soccer. They're the best in the entire world. Woo! Go USA!
Fans cheered Coach Jill Ellis and her players, including 32-year-old midfielder Carly Lloyd, who scored 3 of the 5 goals in Sunday's final game. The match drew the largest American television audience of any soccer game ever, attracting more than 25 million viewers. The team is an inspiration to the young female players who came to greet their heroes, says teenage fan Christina Prieto.
They're like a family. They support each other no matter what.
For some, the win highlights the disparity in pay between male and female players, which fan Lisa Bartoli calls unfair. She says that's a battle to be fought another time. This is a day to celebrate the women who came home with a World Cup trophy. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Singer Demi Lovato started her career with Disney and has several chart-scoring songs to her credit. She's also battled addiction, been diagnosed as bipolar, and been outspoken on gay rights issues. Now, music is once more playing a big role, with a new single called Cool for the Summer. International Edition's David Byrd and Larry London are here to talk about it.
She's got a hot new tune out. It's called Cool for the Summer. She took a little spill when she was promoting it over the holiday weekend. Who am I talking about? Demi Lovato. Larry London joins me in the studio. Larry, Demi has got a new song out. And a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about whether something would be voted Song of the Summer. But this is Cool for the Summer. And tell me about this.
Well, this single is coming up from her fifth album, which she is still working on and is yet to be titled. But she says it's a great, fun, happy, upbeat summer song. And as you mentioned, she did fall down during a performance in Los Angeles, which has gotten a lot of attention on social media. And, you know, of course, you should never do something like that when you're at the poolside in high heels.
Yeah, the heels she was wearing. I looked at a photograph, and I think it was in Rolling Stone. The heels she was wearing were almost 12 centimeters, and they were bright yellow.
I think
big,
she learned
huge
a lesson.
Platform heels. And it wasn't like she was doing anything extraordinary. She just moved, and because she's on a plexiglass pool deck above a pool full of people, her fans, and she just slipped and
right.
fell. But in the days of everyone having a smartphone, it's all over YouTube.
It's everywhere.
And so she, to her credit, made the most of it, saying, well, that's definitely how not to be cool for the summer. But then she jumped right into this pool full of fans.
Tell me what you want, what you like, it's okay. I'm a little curious, too. Tell me if it's wrong, if it's right, I don't care. I can keep a secret, kid.
Well, she's a cool person. I met her and I spoke to her. She was on Border Crossing. She's a great person. She's involved with many great causes which are near and dear to her, like equality in marriage. And she's also outspoken for lesbian and gay rights. And she talks about depression because she herself had undergone therapy for a number of issues a few years ago. And so she's very, very much behind these causes, and she's not afraid or ashamed to speak out about them. So she's doing that. She's launched her own charity foundations around these different social issues. And on top of that, she manages to find time for film and music. She's going to replace Katy Perry in the upcoming Get Smurfy movie. She's going to be Smurfette, which is a character that Katy Perry had been. And she's also working on her fifth album, as I mentioned.
Now, this song, Cool for the Summer, this is, shall we say, a little warm, kind of hotter than July. There's some lyrics in this that, you know, I can just see the record label people going, oh, what is she talking about?
So. Well, you know, we're all excited about the new album because she is, you know, taking a different direction, she said, with the new album. It'll be very 80s flavored, and that seems to be, you know, the flavor of the day, because it seems like a lot of artists are going in that direction. So we're looking forward to that. She said, you know, this particular song, Cool for the Summer, combines sounds that you recognize from other artists, and it's a very upbeat, very happy song.
All right, well, we look forward to it. That's VOA's Larry London. If you want to chat with him, you can always hit him up on VOA underscore music. You can find his show Border Crossings on our website. That's www.voanews.com. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can send us a tweet at VOA underscore IE.
Got my mind.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. For more news, information, and videos, go to our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The use of new technologies is a key tool to promote human rights. Though authoritarian governments may seek to control the flow of information online, human rights activists, journalists, and everyday citizens can use technology to disseminate information, to expose corruption and other misdeeds and abuses, and to stay in contact with like-minded individuals. Last year, 41 countries passed or proposed laws or regulations to punish or restrict speech online. More and more governments increasingly blocked access to websites they deemed undesirable and criminalized online speech. In Tajikistan, for example, the government intermittently blocked access to social media sites, including Facebook and YouTube. The Turkish government briefly blocked YouTube and Twitter in the lead-up to local elections. In China, the government continues to block access to websites deemed controversial, such as those discussing Taiwan or the Dalai Lama or even the New York Times. And in December, the Chinese government blocked large numbers of users of Gmail, the world's largest email service provider. Other governments passed new laws to go after activists who use the Internet to express themselves. Many who were arrested were sentenced to long prison terms, fines, corporal punishment, and even banishment. In Vietnam, authorities continue to harass, intimidate, arrest, and convict bloggers who express views critical of the government online. But even as governments attempt to control expression and access to information online, human rights activists use new technologies such as satellite imagery, video, and crowdsourcing technologies to gather and disseminate information and to document human rights abuses in areas where security and accessibility are a problem. Today, technology can be used to provide accurate information regarding protests, destruction, and violence in countries around the world. Technology can help increase transparency and fight corruption. So even as authoritarian governments become more aggressive in cracking down on freedom of expression, both online and offline, people in every country become more and more connected and better informed. Banning websites and blocking content are misguided attempts to impose order. Instead, governments must respect fundamental freedoms and promote an open global internet.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.